get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here loud and wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you were 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 266 of the reporter. Right now, we're rocking out to some JB's Monorail, man. This is from the JB's, man. Your man Span feeling real uncle-ish tonight, so go ahead and rock out with your boy.
Check out Expo in Seattle.
Indeed, y'all. I could let that shit go all night. I really could because the song is that fucking long, man. It's about 8 minutes and shit, man. But I remember riding around with my uncle, listening to this shit, riding around the streets of Chicago, man. Banging that shit with the 16s in the trunk, man. This some real smooth-ass shit. I like the way that the transitions and everything, man. It's way before y'all time. And y'all don't know nothing about this here. Yeah, man, let me go ahead and cut that off. But, yeah, man, what's going on? It's episode 266 of the Span Report Podcast, man. And, yo, I kind of wanted to do this shit earlier, But your man Spam been dealing with some shit, man. I got some problems. I got problems going on, man. I got shit going on with my bathtub that like needs some assistance. My website is on the fritz. Like I'm in the middle of like trying to like move the site from to a more secure server because we've been getting hit with a few different hacks, man. So I try to move the website to a new server, but now I'm like just pretty much waiting for my domain name to unlock so that I can move the domain name to the new shit and, you know, y'all don't have any issues with nothing. But, you know, it takes time, man. Some of these things are just kind of out of my hands, but I did want to get you guys a show. And so we're going to do that tonight, regardless of whether or not the website is ready tonight or not. Right? So we're going to do that. But of course, before we get into the show, man, I do have to remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Spam Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. This area code 313-288-0485. Leave us those voicemail messages, and of course, those voicemail messages will get played here on the show and in Sprying the Two in Kind. And we haven't got a voicemail in quite some time, man. I'm feeling a little salty about that. I got some feelings, man. I'm in my feels about it. It's like,
what's the matter? You can't call nobody.
I don't like it, man. Y'all should call your boy, man. Let your boy know what y'all feeling about what we talking about here on the Spare Report Podcast, man. Real talk. So go ahead, leave those voicemails, man. And if you're watching the show live here with us on Crowdcast, man, you can also chop it up with us live here on the show and get your voice heard that way as well, man. Also hit us up on the email at feedback@thespamreport.com. We still get those emails. As feedback@thespamreport.com. As a matter of fact, we got an email that we're gonna respond to tonight. So that's gonna be part of the little feedback segment. But feedback@thespamreport.com is your way of getting on the show as well. You can email us the show, and we will read the email here on the show, respond to you here on the show as well. So go ahead and hit up that email at feedback@thespamreport.com. You can also hit your man Span up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. We talk a little shit over there, you know, especially on Twitter. I've been using that motherfucking for those of you who watch Power, you know, Lorenz Tate has been, Councilman. He's Councilman Tate on Power. And he's got like this nigga what meme that's been going on. I've been using that shit a lot, especially considering a lot of the political shit that's been going on. I use that shit a lot this week. So, yeah, man, we be talking shit on the Twitter streets, man. Hit up our website when I get that bitch back up at www.thespanreport.com. You can go there. You can watch replays of the show. You can vote in the polls when we decide to put one up. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And of course, we really do appreciate every dime over here at the Spam Report Podcast Network. And you do that through PayPal when you do it that way, right? That's one way of donating to the show. But we also have an additional way for those of you who would like to take a more permanent donating stance with the Spam Report Podcast, and that's through our Patreon. You can hit us up on patreon.com/TSRPN and become a Patreon patron of the show. And the Patreon patrons are the ones who allow for us to be able to do these shows here live on Crowdcast. As a matter of fact, let me give them their shout out this month. As we are shouting out our Patreon patrons, we got the homie Aaron B. Aaron B, thank you for coming through with your donation this month. The homie Dre came through with another donation this month, so shout out to you as well. The homie Jay Muddy came through once again this month with another donation, so we really do appreciate you. And Kimberly B came through this month with a donation this month, so we really do appreciate you guys. These are the Golden Circle of the Spam Report Podcast Network. You can be a part of that Golden Circle by going to TSRPN. I'm sorry, go to patreon.com/TSRPN and you can contribute to the Spam Report Podcast and help us continue to do this with the live shows and everything else. And we really do appreciate you guys for helping us do this in this way, man. Real talk. Also, man, that's it. I think that's it. Yeah, that's all. That's everything. No, that's not everything. Five-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those five-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show, and we really do appreciate you guys for doing that. It doesn't take you any money, no dimes, just a couple minutes of your time to let everybody know why you're messing with us over here at the Spam Report Podcast Network. And, yeah, man, that's it. That we got the business out the way. Let's go through some things. I got a couple random thoughts, man. And my first random thought is like, yo, shout out to Throwback Thursday, man. Throwback Thursday is the shit. I'm not gonna lie. One of the things that I like about Throwback Thursday is that it kind of allows for you to kind of look back and see where you were, over the course of time, man. Sometimes you don't really know how much life has changed for you until you are able to just kind of take a step back and look and be like, man, a lot's changed over the course of some time, man. And so one of the things about Throwback Thursday, I always kind of like chuckle at is the fact that your man Span ain't put on some pounds. I remember like it used to be this thing where I had this really, really, really high metabolism. I could eat whatever, you know what I'm saying? And it never really showed, you know. I remember when I first started my job, man, I might have been 150 soaking wet, you know, and now I'm like a solid 213 pounds. And I feel it, you know what I'm saying? I feel it in my shoulders. I feel it in my knees. I feel it. And when you look at the pictures and shit, you'd be like, man, I was a little skinny in that one. You know what I'm saying? I used to be that small. Damn, I can't even fit my clothes don't fit the same no more, right? You got that whole thing going on. But one of the things I always like struggle with, and then when I saw a baby picture of me, I posted this on social media. I posted it on Facebook, and I think I posted it on Instagram. I posted a picture of me when I was a baby, and I was looking at my hairline. And my hairline has always just kind of had this round shape to it. It's just always this kind of, like, it's just always been round, you know? And I was thinking, if I ever was to, like, come up with my memoirs, you know, if any of you were ever interested in your man Span, like, writing a book about his life and shit, I would call it my hairline and me, the beautiful struggle, you know, because it's been a struggle my entire life. Me and my hairline have not gotten along, man. Me and my hairline just got this complicated relationship to the point now where your man Span just said, fuck it, and just cut everything off, man. Because not only was the hairline like kind of combed, you know, kind of coned off, but then I started seeing those, like, the McDonald's golden arches starting to come in too. I was like, you know what? I think it's time for me to let this go. It's not me, you know. I ain't keeping anything that I don't want to be kept. You know what I'm saying? And apparently, my hairline and my hair wasn't really trying to be kept around these parts. But here's the other part too that I think is really fucked up about getting older, right? So you start losing your hair like around the front, like you know, in your hairline or whatever else. But then you start, like, growing hair in places you didn't grow hair before. And I don't really like that shit. So sometimes, man, I be catching myself having to pluck hairs out of my ears. That's some bullshit, bruh. That's some bullshit. I don't think that should be a part of the whole growing old game, man. We should, whenever we go meet God, you know, whenever we go meet him, we should probably have a conversation with God. Like, yo, bruh, like, come, let me holler at you for a minute, man. This whole hair out of my ears thing, man. I mean, I know you all know it and all saying, maybe it was for a reason that I did not understand, but help me understand. Cause, honestly, man, I kind of think that was some bull, bro. I mean, is it punishment? Is it punishment? I don't know. Like, for all of the things that you had done before, you're like, yeah, man, I'm gonna clog your ears up with this hair. And then, you ain't gonna be able to hear shit the way that's probably why motherfuckers be going deaf outside of the, like, loud noises and, you know, sicknesses and stuff. It's probably all that hair in their ears and shit. You know, they got to trim it and whatnot. You know, that's the thing. Yeah, but Throwback Thursday. Another thing about Throwback Thursday, man. So I saw like an older picture of me, like when I was a single guy and I was in this apartment in Detroit. And it's funny because my wife would say that, like, you know, when she first met me and stuff, that I used to always dress like I was a drug dealer, you know what I'm saying? So I posted this picture on Facebook and on Twitter. No, not on Twitter, I'm sorry, on Instagram. And I gotta say, man, fuck all of y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, fuck all y'all, man. It be your own people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I posted that, like, yo, man, do y'all get drug dealer vibes? And all of a sudden, niggas start telling me I look like I sold weed, look like I had that good shit, you know what I'm saying? Niggas start posting The Wire memes and shit. Like, they're like, yeah, you look like a drug dealer. All it took was a white tee and a White Sox baseball cap, and all of a sudden, your man Span is a drug kingpin. I don't appreciate that, man. The stereotypical ways in which y'all think about drug dealers is really fucked up, and I don't appreciate it. I was comfortable, goddammit. It was, you know, like early 30s, man. I think I might have took that picture like 2010, maybe 2009. Yeah, it had to be around that time. I was employed. so yeah, man, that's going on. The other random thought that I kind of got, though, was it's not necessarily as funny, but it's something that I was thinking about earlier this week, because I was seeing this, like, these random stories coming across my Facebook, you know, timeline and shit. But, like, yo, niggas ain't learned shit from 2016, man. Like, ain't learned a goddamn thing. Like, I'm still seeing people post articles from websites they've never heard of, articles they probably didn't even read, sharing these things. And a lot of times these articles are bogus. They're from bogus websites. They're from bogus sources. Nobody is checking what it is they're posting. They see a headline and boom, that story gets shared again. Nobody knows where it came from. And this is kind of what happened in 2016, man, when we start seeing all these phony ass headlines and whatnot. And after watching that story, there's a documentary on Netflix called The Great Hack. After watching The Great Hack, and like being in this space as far as like being like a podcaster and usually just trying to I get a lot of my content from social media, just trying to figure out what it is that's on people's mind, what it is that people are talking about. But like some of these things that I'm seeing, I'm just like, yeah, man, it's gonna be an uphill climb, man, because, you know, people just, they're not really like vetting the sources from which they get the information and whatnot from. So yeah, man, those are my random thoughts. Those are my random thoughts going into episode 266. But not only do I have random thoughts, but we got an email that we need to respond to. So let me go ahead and pull out the trusty spam phone. And not the trusty spam phone. Come on, spam. Let me go ahead and pull out my phone and let me pull this email up. Come on, man. What the fuck? What the fuck, man? All right, so let's see if we can do this here. Since my phone seems to be locking one orientation, let's see if we can rotate this damn thing. No. Come on. Yo, this is fucked, yo. Let me try this again. All right, there we go. Whew. Okay, so let me pull up this email. And we'll respond to this here now. This is actually from, Chadwick the Ruler. All right. And Chadwick the Ruler writes in and say, I'd never heard of your show until a coworker of mine told me to give it a listen as we were discussing the Revolt Summit. What I got from it is that you don't like Candace Owens. And surprisingly, you don't like Killer Mike, whom I think made some profound points during the discussion. I think some of the criticisms you leveled his way about his support of Bernie Sanders were a bit unfair, and it colored your ability to be objective on the issue. So my question to you is this. You seem pretty sure that you are the one who folks should be listening to and that you have all the answers, but do you have the ability to admit that you might be wrong on something, especially when it pertains to the Revolt Summit? The whole thing about that Revolt Summit, you said you listened to it, but my thing about the Revolt Summit was the fact that, like, I don't believe Candace Owens is a good actor. I believe that Candace Owens argues in bad faith. I believe that Candace Owens articulates points that are to the detriment of to black society, really. And so I don't consider having a conversation with her to be a good thing. I think sometimes, as I said in that episode, sometimes we pat ourselves on the back for having the conversation with people who we know mean us bad intentions, who have bad intentions for us. And I don't necessarily, you know, believe that we should be engaging with those folks and acting as though they have, they're arguing in good faith when we know that they aren't. Right. So I think like the optics of having her with a Killer Mike and a TI was more so her playing to the opposite. Like, she wasn't playing for the room. She was playing for outside of the room. That's just how I kind of feel about it. Now, my thing with Killer Mike is Killer Mike gets a lot of press. He gets a lot of publicity, especially within like the hip hop, you know, not even necessarily hip hop, but like when you start thinking about mass media, you'll hear people like, say, for instance, someone like Charlamagne Tha God, who has attained a level of credibility amongst political circles. They'd be having this dude on CNN and MSNBC shows and shit. And a lot of times you'll find politicians going on the Breakfast Club because they know that they have an audience, right? So with someone like Killer Mike, you'll hear people like throwing all these laudits towards Killer Mike. The thing is, it's for I sometimes feel like it's for an audience of people who just haven't really read up on a lot of the things that Killer Mike is talking about. And so now you've got Killer Mike talking to people who aren't necessarily versed in the history, who aren't necessarily versed in the policy, who aren't necessarily versed in the politics, and they're listening to Killer Mike and they're thinking, well, damn, that sounds great. But when you dig into the policy, when you dig into the history, when you dig into the politics, you start finding out that it's not as cut and dry as Killer Mike would, you know, sometimes make it out to be. And so I think Killer Mike gets a pass in ways that, you know, a lot of seasoned political, talking heads would get. Like you expect some a level of knowledge from them. And I guess, you know, there's also the whole thing with Killer Mike being a rapper. And it's like, well, you don't really expect this from coming from a rapper. It's like, why wouldn't you? I mean, honestly, to a certain degree, I don't necessarily have the level of admiration for Killer Mike that a lot of folks have. And then even as I was doing the, my breakdown of the Revolt Summit, I'm basically just telling you why I thought what was coming out of their mouths was bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Just like with, say, for instance, with Candace Owens, right? So, I'm going back a little bit to how Candace Owens was on that stage with a Killer Mike and with a T.I. And one of the things that caught me, one of the things I thought was very interesting was the fact that T.I. caught her, kept saying repeatedly, I want to like you so bad. I want to like you so bad. You don't have to want to like her so bad. Killer Mike calling the both of them, calling, Candace Owens brilliant. Like, no, she's not brilliant. She's a fucking scam artist. You know what I'm saying? So there's that. And then on top of it, it's like there's a perpetuation. There is a perpetuation of certain power structures, so to speak. And there is a desire to kind of keep some of those power structures in place, right? So when Candace Owens gets on stage and says that, black children are born to single parent homes, and in 70% in the 1960s, it was like 23% and everything else. And you've got T.I., you've got Killer Mike talking about some, yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's a problem. Like, the part that they don't really discuss is that, black fatherhood what they don't discuss is your relationship status doesn't dictate whether or not you are a good parent or not. Right. And so you being a single parent only denotes that you are not married to the father or the mother of your child, right? That's all it really denotes. Now, how you guys maintain or how you guys manage to raise that child up in a partnership outside of being married is between you and the father or mother of that child. But that doesn't mean that that child is automatically devoid of parents because they decided they didn't want to be married. And so, like, you got that. And then you've got guys like Killer Mike and T.I. sitting there shaking their head, nodding in agreement because they benefit from there being a patriarchal power structure within Black society. They do. It's part of the reason why I come down on Hotep so much, because Hotep, to a large degree, don't necessarily want to get rid of the white man. He just wants to take the white man's place in the power structure. He will very well keep it in the same exact way that it is if he's only only changing who's in charge. We're going to swap this white man out for this Black man to the detriment of Black women, to the detriment of to the LGBT community. They don't give a damn so long as it's them in power. So this is part of the reason why I'm just kind of like, when I see Killer Mike, being lauded in some of the ways that he is, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, and there's some of the reasons why, right? So then you ask me about whether or not there's some things that I, I would admit to being wrong about. I could say I was probably wrong about the whole, net neutrality thing. I can remember being on this microphone and now, like, kind of going back some months now, kind of sounded alarmist, about, the whole net neutrality thing, especially with, especially since the Trump administration's, FCC, I forget what that guy, Ajit Pai, I forget what exactly his title was, but having that guy in place and trying to basically, limit or, but the way it was sold to us or the way that I understood it was that net neutrality would kind of curb a lot of development, a lot of internet access to the haves and the have-nots. If you had, you know, monies to pay for high-speed internet, then you would have access to it. If you didn't, you wouldn't have access to it. It would also curb your ability to get to certain websites. So if you had the ability to pay for, you know, for folks to come visit your website, then you would be prioritized in place to have your website loaded up. And other websites who didn't have that, then you wouldn't, you know. So I could say I was probably wrong about that, or at least if I wasn't wrong about it, it just hasn't manifested itself as fastly as I thought it would. Right. That's one thing. Another thing that I could say that I was probably wrong about was having the Black, White, and Yellowish podcast associated with the Span Report Podcast Network, having not research the podcast before putting it out here, having the misunderstanding between those hosts as to what the vision here at the Span Report Podcast Network was, and how that would, you know, how that could coincide with what we were doing here. Like, you know, it just wasn't a good fit, and that was a mistake on my part. What's another thing I was wrong about, man? I know I've been wrong about quite a bit, and I've been doing this for 9 years. I mean, everything that I say, I'm sure I haven't hit on all of them. I guess that's up for you guys too, to kind of remind me of, you know. I'm sure I've said some shit on this show where I was like, nah, Span, you dead ass wrong on that one. And truth be told, I'm probably gonna say some shit tonight that I'm probably going to be seen as being dead ass wrong on. And I might be dead ass wrong, but one of the things that I want to do with the show is, like, yo, leave it open for you guys to be able to have that conversation, you know? And so those are the two things that I can think of right now. I'm sure there are more, but I am not above admitting to, yo, I fucked up on that. I was wrong on that. I'm sure I've done some things. I'm sure I've apologized for some things I said on this show before that I don't necessarily agree with now. So, no, I'm not above that. And I don't think I have all the answers. I just think sometimes when I'm looking at social media, if I'm what you're getting with this show is my opinion of the world. I mean, that's pretty much what this is. You're getting the regular dude who watches, you know, the news, who keeps up with things doing social media, and then I give my opinion on what I'm thinking about what's happening in the world. So, yeah, I'm going to be wrong about some things. But, you know, I appreciate, you know, the question and the back and forth, man. I don't have any problem with it. You know what I'm saying? So thank you to what's my man name again? Come on. Chadwick. Chadwick the Ruler. Appreciate you writing in, and I hope to hear from you again soon, brother. Real talk. But now that we got the feedback out of the way, let's get into our show. Let's get into the news. All right, our first story here in the news, man, is something that has been all over the social media streets this past week. Amber Geiger, the police officer, the Dallas police officer, who said that she mistook her apartment for her neighbor and killed her neighbor while he was sitting in his apartment eating ice cream, she was convicted of his murder this week. Let me read this story here. This comes out of CBSnews.com. It says a jury has sentenced the former. Wait. Oh, this is for the sentencing. Well, she was convicted of murder, but a jury has sentenced the former Dallas police officer to 10 years in the shooting death of her unarmed neighbor last year. Amber Geiger was convicted of murder Tuesday by the same jury in the death of Botham Jean. Geiger testified that she mistook Jean's apartment for her own and opened fire thinking he was an intruder. The sentence comes after emotional testimony from John's family and the trial's punishment phase, along with testimony from Geiger's supporter. Now, I believe, is there video attached to this? Let me see if there, see if there is. So
he has sentenced former Dallas.
So there is video. Let me pull this up so you guys can watch right along with you. Let's do this here. All right, here we go.
Dallas police officer Amber Geiger to 10 years in prison. She was convicted of murdering her unarmed neighbor, Botham John, in his own apartment. Omar Villafranca reports from Dallas.
The same jury that convicted former police officer Amber Geiger of murder has now decided her sentence.
We, the jury, find unanimously that the defendant did not cause the death of Botham John while under the immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause, and assess the defendant's punishment at 10 years imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice.
Geiger faced between 5 years and life behind bars for killing her neighbor, 26-year-old Botham John.
She was sweet.
Before deciding her fate, jurors heard from Geiger's 66-year-old mother.
She was very upset. I couldn't understand her when she first told me. I couldn't understand her because she was crying so hard.
They also heard from both of Jean's devastated parents.
My family's brokenhearted. How could it be possible? I'll never see him again.
It's just been like a roller coaster. I cannot sleep. I cannot eat.
At the trial, 31-year-old Geiger testified she had entered John's apartment by mistake, thinking it was her own. He was watching TV and eating ice cream when she mistook him for a burglar.
I pulled my gun out and I yelled at him. It's like, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands.
Attorneys for John's family called the outcome of the trial a sign of change in policing culture. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Dallas, Texas.
All right. So, that was that story, right? So here's the thing. Let me go ahead and pull that down. So here's the thing, right? Because I didn't watch any of the Botham John, Amber Geiger. I didn't watch any of the trial at all. Much of the information that I got from about the trial was from social media. And most of it was like just kind of watching folks' reactions to what was going on with the trial. And, it was kind of interesting, man. So one of the first things that like I thought was kind of interesting was, I remember when, first things first, I remember when we used to think, well, not we, but I remember because of the culture, because of the how often this was happening, which precipitated the Black Lives Matter movement, where we would, you know, we couldn't even rely on law enforcement officers who were involved in the killing of a person of color or a black person in particular. We couldn't count on them even being indicted. We couldn't even count on that. Right. She was indicted. We couldn't count on them going to a trial. Her shit went to trial. We couldn't count on there being a guilty verdict. She was convicted. I didn't watch the trial at all, man. Like I said, I for the most part was just kind of watching how folks were reacting to what was going on with the trial. And I gotta say, man, like to some degree, I'm just like, I'm a little disappointed in like how some folks were reacting to what was going on. Not everything, you know, and like I said, I know I'm probably going to piss some folks off with this episode, but like, I'm just kind of disappointed as how I saw some people reacting to this, because I'm watching this and I'm like, man, I remember when it was like, yo, shit, we couldn't even get an indictment 5 years ago. Here we are at a trial and this lady's being fucking convicted. And part of the reason why I know this happens is because I know that we're trying to shield ourselves from being disappointed, from having the hurt of the disappointment come down like, man, here we go again with this bullshit. I know that's where that comes from, you know? So I didn't get anybody's mentions about it. I didn't like argue with anybody about this. It's like, yo, I know where this comes from, because we've seen this movie so many times before. We feel like we know the outcome. We know what this is going to be, right? And so as the process played out and, you know, I saw how people's emotions were swinging and shit. And so the judge in this trial at a certain point, allowed for the Castle Doctrine to be used as a defense for Amber Geiger during this trial. And I remember questioning that myself, like, she's actually able to use that, and she wasn't in her own home, because that's typically what the Castle Doctrine means, is that you are allowed to protect your own home. You do not have a duty to retreat. Someone invades your home, you have a right to protect yourself. You have a right to protect, you know, your family and your home. That's pretty much how that Castle Doctrine is usually meted out. And so you associate the Castle Doctrine with your own house, not somebody else's, right? And so I remember seeing that on the timeline. I remember kind of being a little perturbed by it, being a little bit upset about it. I saw a lot of people on social media being perturbed by it, being a little bit upset about it. Like, man, how's she going to allow this, this shit to happen, right? And then the conviction comes down. And then suddenly it was the judge is a goddamn genius, right? Because apparently by allowing the Castle Doctrine to be used as a defense within her trial, Amber is supposedly appeal proofs her conviction to where she can't appeal her conviction because she could, you know, use the Castle Doctrine as a basis for appeal later on. And so by that already being implemented or allowed as a defense, and it's still resulting in her conviction, Amber Geiger can no longer invoke the Castle Doctrine as a way of appealing her conviction. So it went from, why in the fuck is she doing that, to, goddamn, she's a genius, right? It's kind of weird, right, watching the ebb and flow of this. The conviction comes down and folks were like, well, we got to wait for the sentencing. We got to wait for the sentencing. And so when I heard, like, you know, I'm looking at folks and I'm like, okay, wait for the sentencing. So I decided for myself to just say, well, let me go ahead and look up what this, you know, the statute or, the mandatory minimum is for a murder conviction in Texas. Like, what's the standard limit? And it went from 5 to 99 years, according to the statute, right? And I was like, well, shit, she's looking at least 5 years. And folks are like, well, she'll probably do less time than that with good time and everything. Like, you know, and again, I know where this comes from, right? We don't have faith in the system. We don't have faith in it. Y'all talking to somebody who don't really have faith in the system much either. But I know where this comes from. And the jury decided that they would sentence her to 10 years in prison. And I'll say this, I do not believe that 10 years in prison is enough for the taking of a life, right? You're talking to somebody whose uncle was convicted of murder. He did kill somebody. And I believe my uncle did maybe 26 years. He did 26 years before they released him. So, yeah, man, I I'm not of the belief that he should have got a lighter sentence considering what he did. No, I'm not even saying that at all. I'm not surprised that, you know, people are upset with the 10 years. I think she should have gotten more. She should have gotten more. I am not arguing with people about that whatsoever. And then some curious shit started to happen, right? Botham Jean's younger brother made a victim impact statement, you know, concerning this case. And he basically just said he forgave Amber Geiger for the killing of his brother, that he hoped that she found Christ while she was in jail. And that he really wished that she didn't go to jail. Like, he didn't want her to go to jail, that he forgave her. And that he hoped that she found Christ. And then he made an extraordinary request in asking, could he hug Amber Geiger, which pissed a lot of people off, pissed a lot of folks off, man, on social media. I saw some disturbing shit being said about the Jean family on social media, especially like on Twitter, more so on Twitter than I did on like Facebook. But I saw some real like kind of like disturbing shit being said about them. They are, you know, I've seen people call the Jean family like liabilities to the race. I've seen them called all kinds of coons. As a matter of fact, let me do this here. Let me pull this up so you guys can see. All right. So let me do this here. Let's go to, whoops. All right. So here we go. This is some of the reactions that I saw to the Jean family on Twitter. You got this one person saying, different topic. You got Botham Jean's coon ass family, black family members, a black court officer and a black judge hugging his white devil, Amber Geiger, shaking my head 10 years for coming in my crib and killing me. Make note of that. Make note of that, because this is something I think is very interesting, and it kind of drives what I'm getting at later in talking about this. Y'all can have all that. I'm not going to the judge. I'm not going to judge the family on how they deal with shit. All this is some submissive, grateful slave shit. I'm judgy as fuck. Coon away, Jean family. Just know your brother, son deserve so much better. And death, bro. This is only. What bro was truly on his own. Okay. Let's see. The whole family is nothing but immigrant coons. Yes, even Botham Jean himself. I saw all the pictures of him hugged up with all those white women. And did y'all see that white girl testify in court talking about she was his best friend? So like, this is going on. It said, let this be a lesson learned. Coons and Sambos are not to be trusted. They will turn on you dead or alive. They are the way that they are raised, that this behavior is acceptable. This is dangerous for us, and we must detach ourselves from them, even family. Okay? Another one. Botham Jean's family showing all this forgiveness is sickening. Then for that coon-ass judge to join in is fucking disgusting. 10 years for killing someone in their own house. The family really ain't trying to find the real reason she went into that apartment. Okay? And, yeah, so you got that. And then on like Facebook, because I saw a few of these on Facebook as well. Let's see. People are upset because as black men and women, we are never offered forgiveness for even the smallest thing. We feel that Botham Jean and his was our family, just as Tamir, Trayvon, Jordan, Sandrix, Eric, Philando, and the mother, Emmanuel Nine, before him. I would not have offered my forgiveness so quickly, but I am not mad at this young man for following his heart. Let's see. Another person said, how sad, boy, son, the slave mentality lives on. So then, why are your family suing for wrongful death? You forgave her, remember? Another one says, well, I don't forgive his brother for forgiving a person who killed his brother. His brother's life had more value than 10 years. Hugging a murderer doesn't fix that. Okay. So like I said, man, some disappointing sort of reactions to what was going on with that. And it's part of the reason why I named this episode tonight, what did you lose? Right? Because when Botham Jean's brother got on that stand and said that he forgave Amber Geiger, that he did not want her to go to jail, that it offered and asked whether or not he could give her a hug. At that moment, I relinquished all fucking rights myself to being more upset about the loss of Botham Jean than his own family. Like, I can't be. I didn't lose this guy. I didn't know this guy. Excuse me. I didn't know him. I had no relationship with him at all. The people who most intimately had relationships with him were expressing a sense of forgiveness to the person who took him away from them. Right? Now, I also understand how this plays in the larger sense of like how the media plays this. Right? We saw a lot of this after the Charleston Nine were killed by Dylann Roof, and the reactions to a lot of the parishioners there, or being asked whether or not they forgave Dylann Roof for what it was he did to the church and the members of the church, and the expectation of black people to react with a forgiving heart towards racial violence meted out against them. I get how that can be irritatingly. I get how you can be irritated by that. Because right-wing media will use those times, will use those events to sort of belittle your level of outrage about what's going on. Right? I get how it gets used. I get all of that. Like, at a certain point, I think with so much shit going on in the world, that sometimes you got to kind of take a step back. And I think that's what I really was trying to do with this particular case, was like trying to take a step back and not invoking myself in the story, invoking myself in the narrative. And what you saw from a lot of the different reactions to the Jean family and how they were forgiving of what happened and forgiving to Amber Geiger, was that you saw a lot of people invoking themselves into the narrative. They were making this entire thing about themselves. They see themselves in a Botham Jean, just in much the same way that, like, I saw myself in Philando Castile, right? As someone who carries a gun legally, who rides around in my car sometimes with my gun legally, and I get pulled over by the cops. Yeah, I can visualize that situation because I've been in a situation where I had a gun on me. I've got the gun in my car illegally and the police pulled me. I can visualize myself. I can see myself in that situation and I can empathize and sympathize with that entire thing. I get all of it. And so when we see someone dealing with a situation where we have also dealt with something similar to that, we personalize it. But his family felt as though they wanted to go a route where I think a lot of people just weren't ready for them to say, or just weren't, you know, they weren't ready for them to be there in that space because they ain't ready. Like, you still got, you got America, you got Black America who's still hot about this. They're like, man, what the fuck? She came in this man's house and shot him while he was eating ice cream and watching TV. And it's a rightful indignation. It's a rightful indignation. But at the moment where his family was like, yo, through our hurt, through our pain, we don't want to harbor any ill will towards this woman. To see how people were reacting to that, I'm going to be just honest with y'all, man. Like, I just thought it was disappointing to see how people were calling these people coons and slave mentality and all of this shit. It's like, man, y'all don't know these people. Y'all didn't know him. And the minute that it wasn't going a way that you thought it should, suddenly the family, the people who lost him, became coons and sellouts. That's wild. And you get to a place like that when you feel like you are owed something, right? That the Jean family owed you something. They owed you some level of Black retribution. They needed to be just as angry as you were angry because you wanted to see more happen. And they didn't deliver on that for a lot of people. And so what we started seeing was a bit of a backlash towards the Jean family. Now, the other person with whom saw some backlash as well was the judge in this case. Right? Now, remember, I told you guys before, it went, you know, people were kind of skeptical of her after she invoked the ability for the defense attorney to allow the Castle Doctrine to be, you know, allowed in her defense of this case. And then when Amber Geiger was convicted, suddenly she was a genius. And then after that, she gets down. She hugs the family of the... She hugs the Jean family first. She hugs them first. And then she did something that a lot of people have never seen before. She gave her Bible to Amber Geiger. And she also hugged Amber Geiger before she was led away. And so she's coming under fire because of her sense of compassion and sense of unorthodox, like the unorthodox way. And I guess you could say she ran her courtroom. Truth be told, man, I'm with y'all on that. And the reason why I'm with y'all on that is because you don't see that more often than not when it concerns murder, convicted murderers. And you for damn sure don't see it when it's a convicted murderer who happens to be a black man who was convicted of murdering a white woman. If the shoes were on the other foot, we wouldn't have that visual. We just wouldn't. And I know we wouldn't. So I understand people's, you know, I understand why people are like, man, what the fuck is she doing? Right? What is she doing with this particular act? But the Jean family, again, I feel as though we have inserted ourselves into this story so much that because the Jean family didn't react in the way that we thought that they should have, that it somehow lessens. That it somehow lessens the calls for justice sometimes that folks really, really want, right? The other part about it, which I know is also a part of this, is the fact that, yo, like white people, mainstream media, right-wing media will use the Jean family as a way to talk about black forgiveness and, you know, how noble black people are when they forgive racial discrimination, when they forgive racial violence meted out against them. I get it. I understand it. All of that. But at the same time, I didn't lose Botham Jean. You didn't lose Botham Jean. His family is the ones who lost Botham Jean. And I can't be over here more mad and more upset about the loss of this man's life than his own family was. I can't do it. I can be disappointed. But not disappointed to the point of calling them coons, man. Not disappointed to the point of, like, just trashing their, you know, their religious beliefs and how they're using it. Like, because, I mean, when we start talking about, like, religious liberty and all that other stuff, man, most of the time when I'm bitching about religious or religious people, it's mostly when they're using their religion to downgrade or to discriminate or to marginalize people. That's not what they were doing. And I've heard this before, but like, and I don't, you know, y'all talking to somebody who has a hard time forgiving people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember there were years, man, where I didn't talk to my grandfather. There were years where I didn't talk to my father. Like, there were years where I just like, yo, man, fuck them. Because I was wronged. And I've heard that, like, you know, the forgiveness is really for you, not for them, because you, by not forgiving them and holding that grudge, you know, they have more power over your life because they may have moved on with their life, not even knowing why you even upset. And you holding on to being upset. I've tried to, like, let some of those old ways go, but it's a process, man. But going back into that family, man, I'm just saying, like, I can't be more mad than they are. That's just it for me. And some of the reactions that I saw to this were a bit disappointing to me. Considering that, you know, I think it's more so about people are upset with the fact that they didn't react in the way that they thought that they, that family didn't react in the way that they personally would have reacted themselves. And they felt betrayed by that. But again, both of them, John, wasn't your brother, wasn't your son, wasn't your cousin, wasn't your uncle, wasn't any of that to you. He was a, by and large, man, for a large, for a good portion of people, Botham John was an avatar for a discussion about systemic racism, about the way in which we let police people, you know, police officers off, the way in which the racial dynamics of a white woman in distress or perceived distress in the proximity of a black man. Like, there was so many different theories going on around that particular case, but his family lost him, not us. And I think we do ourselves a disservice when we start coming at his family cross. Like, I think we do ourselves a disservice when we come at his family the way that a lot of folks have been coming at them, considering we didn't know none of them prior to this man being killed. So that's a heavy way to start the show, but that's in the news, man. Another story that's in the news, man, that has been actually kind of disappointing is the fact that there was a story about a sixth grader who said that she was held down by three white classmates and that she had her dreads cut. Well, apparently that story wasn't true. All right, we're going to go to abcnews.go.com. It says a black sixth grader apologized to her school on Monday, admitting that she had falsely accused white classmates of pinning her to the ground and forcefully cutting her dreadlocks. According to her family, Amari Allen lied last week when she said classmates at Emmanuel Christian School, a private school in Springfield, Virginia, called her hair ugly and nappy while they pinned her down and cut her dreadlocks during recess. Allen and her family met with school officials earlier on Monday before releasing the statement and apologizing to the wrongly accused boys for all the damage the story had caused. It says, to the young boys and their parents, we sincerely apologize for the pain and the anxiety these allegations have caused, the family said in a statement released by the school. To the administrators and families of Emmanuel Christian School, we are sorry for the damage this incident has done to trust within the school family and the undue scorn it has brought to the school. The story sent shockwaves through the school community, where the vice president's wife, Karen Pence, teaches art part-time. School officials said the situation reminded them that the school is not immune from the effects of deep racial wounds in our society, according to a statement released Monday. Allen claimed the incident happened during recess on Monday at a time when teachers and administrators weren't around. She said three male classmates pinned her down to a slide on the playground, held her hands behind her back, and clipped her dreadlocks with scissors. She also accused the boys of covering her mouth to muffle her screams. So so here's the thing. When it comes to this story, and a lot of people have been comparing this to the Jussie Smollett, as a matter of fact, to what's my man name? The Ruler. Chadwick the Ruler. That's another thing I was quite wrong about, was Jussie Smollett. But a lot of people have been comparing this to Jussie Smollett. And, you know, one of the things I always like when it comes to when it comes to these particular stories is you hate for these sorts of things to happen because you know that it only takes one or two of these false stories in order for white supremacists and racists to use this as a cudgel when any other legitimate claim of racism or hate crime happens. You saw it a lot with Jussie Smollett, where anytime something of a racial nature happened with kids or there was a hate crime that had happened, suddenly like, well, let's Jussie Smollett, you know, this is another Jussie Smollett situation. Before Jussie Smollett, it was Tawana Brawley. Before, you know, after that, I remember the Duke lacrosse team. And you hear these, you hear about these stories. They only come up when other stories of actual hate crimes and racial crimes happen. I just kind of wonder what's going on in that young lady's life, where she's aware that she's aware that the racism that is happening across the country, like that she could use that to get some form of attention, to bring attention to herself. I don't think that as a child that she understood that what she was really, you know, causing. I don't think that she really thought that this would get as big as it was, that this would be a national story. I don't know if she thought that this would go national. Maybe, you know, it would be locally, you know, and I think the fact that the vice president's wife partly teaches at that school probably led to a bit more attention to this story than it probably would have gotten before. But I just kind of wonder, like, why, like, what's going on where she thought that this would be a good idea, you know, not a good idea, but like what was going on where she needed some level of attention. It's unfortunate, man. Like, it's unfortunate that, for one, for those little dudes, those little white boys who got wrongly accused of doing something, you know, racist, you kind of wonder what led to her to even do something like that. Was the girl being bullied? Was she being harassed at school racially? We'll never know now because of, you know, the length of the lie went to. We'll never really know. Nobody's going to really pay any attention to that anymore. She may have to go to another school after this. But it does, what it does is it just clouds it muddies the waters for the legitimate claims of hate crimes and racial discrimination being meted out in this country. And it's in much the same way that, like, when we talk about sexual assault, you know, the vast majority of people know, well, not the vast majority of people, stop it, Span. But we know that people, like, most rapes aren't even recorded, but the ones that are tend to be truthful overwhelmingly. But we always know some dude who says he was falsely accused of rape, or they'll point to a story of a famous dude who was falsely, quote unquote, falsely accused of rape. And they'll use that as a cudgel against rape victims to keep them, or to say, well, this is just another example of that. And it's funny how we don't necessarily see, you know, a lot of folks in general conversation, we don't necessarily see these parallels and how this, you know, these discriminations are kind of meted out. That's just pretty much how this goes, man. I hate the fact that this little girl lied. And I think it causes a big problem for any sort of racial animus or any victims of a hate crime coming forward. Because you're going to have a whole lot of people who just simply don't believe that it happened or that it was a real thing. I know the one thing about the Jussie Smollett case was that it made me a little bit less gun shy, a little bit more gun shy to hop on and kind of believe in the way in which I did, because at a certain point, man, like, it just didn't hold up. And, you know, you look like you kind of look silly, and I look silly, you know, kind of, you know, peddling that out, or even, you know, the defense of him in the ways in which I had. But yeah, man, that's fucked up. That's fucked up. That's all I got for you on that one. But that's in the news, man. Now, this story here, I started to put this in Blue Blazes, right? This should have been in Blue Blazes. But, yo, I'm just going to put this in the news, man. So check this out. No, you know what? Nah, fuck that. Let's go. Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
All right. So we got the story here in Blue Blazes, man. So you got this lady. Let's kind of lighten this shit up a bit. But you got this lady, man. She was on the news. We saw this all throughout the week, man. This woman takes her ass into a lion enclosure at the Bronx Zoo and decided that she was gonna dance with this motherfucker.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Yeah, man. So we're gonna read this story here. This comes out of NBCnews.com. As a matter of fact, before we get to reading, let's see if we got some video. We got video. Oh, snap. The video has expired. Well, ain't that some shit? All right. Let's do this. Let's take these. Let's continue to the site there. Let's do that. So they can't play the video no more? Huh. Okay, never mind. So they don't hide the video. But this woman, she jumps into this this lion enclosure. And she she jumps into the lion enclosure. She dances for the lion. The lion is just kind of looking at her like, man, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, kind of giving her the nigga what. He was giving her the Lawrence Tate nigga what look, right? But let's see. Let's read this story. It says, a woman visiting the Bronx Zoo in New York climbed into a lion enclosure and stood feet away from one of the wild animals appearing to taunt it, according to a video of the incident in the zoo. Video shows a woman standing in front of the lion in an African lion exhibit before breaking into a little dance and waving. The lion stands almost motionless, staring at her. The zoo confirmed the incident happened on Saturday, but not identify the woman. This action was a serious violation and unlawful trespass that could be resulted in a serious death or injury, said a spokesperson for the Bronx Zoo. Barriers and rules are in place to keep both visitor staff and animals safe. We have a zero tolerance policy and trespass and violation of barriers. So check this out. One of the things I think was kind of wild about this is the fact that, like, yo, if that lion had went lion on her, they would have had to take the lion out, which is fucked up because the lion is only doing what a lion does. You know what I'm saying? Like why he got to lose his life? Because she was out here being stupid, you know? Like, that was crazy. That, like, luckily, the lion was just looking at her like she, like the fool that she was, right? The other thing, man, is, you know, this is one of those, you hope it wasn't one of us kind of moments. You know, you like, because we associate, I ain't gonna lie, man, we associate this kind of foolery with white people, man. We just do. And only because the track record proves it, man. White people are usually the ones who are out here doing this kind of silly shit. You know, we ain't really about the whole fucking with wild animals thing, man. That just really ain't our bag, you know. But yo, man, turned out to be a sister. Now, this woman had been identified. Social media identified this lady. And not only has she been identified, they done found her Instagram. And now that I done seen her Instagram, I'm going to tell y'all right now, man. Truth be told, bro. I'm going to say I was scared for the lion.
God damn!
Yo, man, I feel like she could have gave the lion some gold, bro. I think, like, this lady looks like she crazy enough to, like, she can get the lion might have got the two-piece in the biscuit. Like, it might not have been the other way around. We might have seen her and she was biting the lion's nuts or some shit like that. Or biting him on the ass or whatever. Like, she came all kind of crazy. As a matter of fact, I ain't going to just leave it to me just saying it. Y'all got to see this shit for y'allself. So let me go ahead and pull this lady's, a couple of these ladies' videos up. Let me pull this up so y'all can see this. Let me go ahead and screen share this. Hold on a second. Let me go ahead and do that. Right so. All right. So, okay, so here go one of these videos, man. Let's view the original. Oh, man. Did she take it down? Oh, man. I think they took it down, man. I think she... Wait a fucking minute, man. What the hell happened in here? I think she took it down, bro. I think she took them down. Oh, man. So here's a picture of her right now. This look right here alone, I don't know, bro. I think the lion might have been scared. That's why he ain't move. Lion like, this motherfucker crazy. Like, I think that's why he ain't move. Let's see if he can pull this video up. It ain't available. I think she done got rid of her shit, man. I was looking at these earlier today, but yeah, man. She was dropping rap bars and shit, man. She was talking about it's Brooklyn, bitch, man. Like she was adamantly crazy. But, yo, man, yo, that's in Blue Blazes, yo. Now, another story that's in Blue Blazes is, we got this lady. She was an actress. As a matter of fact, let me pull the story up here. We got a woman who's an actress in the UK. Her name is, Alawasi Umba. Alawasi Umba was, poised to be in a production of The Color Purple. Alawasi Umba is a devout Christian who seems to have some very fundamentalist Christian-like views on the subject of homosexuality. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of pinknews.co.uk. It says, the Color Purple actress Alawasi Umba is suing for religious discrimination after she was dropped from the LGBT plus production for homophobic comments. Umba was set to play the lead role, so she was going to be Seeley, In a musical adaptation of Alice Walker's award-winning novel, which is about a sexual abuse survivor who regains her confidence after developing a sexual relationship with a woman. But she was dropped from the show after the Hamilton star Aaron Lee Lambert brought to light an offensive Facebook post that she made in 2014. Umba had written, "I do not believe you can be born gay, and I do not believe homosexuality is right. Though the laws of this land have made it legal, doesn't mean it is right. Lambert tweeted, "Do you still stand by this post, or are you happy to remain a hypocrite? Seeing as how you have now been announced to be playing the LGBTQ character, I think you owe your LGBTQ peers an explanation immediately." Umba was urged by Lancaster Curve Theater and her agency, Michael Garrett Associates, to retract the post and apologize, but she refused to do so, citing her Christian faith. "I really wanted the role, but what they wanted me to do was completely against my faith. I did not want to lie just to keep a job." So you took a job. You took a job that in and of itself would have been against your faith. And you saw no problem with it then. She said, "I just quoted what the Bible says about homosexuality, the need for repentance. But ultimately, God's love is for all humanity." She added, adamant that she is not homophobic. "I stand by what I wrote. But I had I known that it would have come to this, I would have set my account to the privacy mode. So had I known that you all was going to call me out on my bigotry, I'd have just hid my shit behind closed doors and not said anything to anybody." Which is, to, you know, truth be told, how a lot of people would prefer they racist bigots anyway. Yo, keep that shit behind, like, keep your shit in the closet. Keep that in the closet. Not, you know, like, nobody really wants you to be able to espouse racist, bigot, you know, bigoted points of view out in the public square. Doesn't look good. It isn't nice. You know, that whole adage, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, you should probably keep that shit to yourself. You know, we all got that speech. But apparently she didn't apply that logic. Says, "I'm heartbroken," she said. "If I'm unable to get back to the stage, then I feel there is no point. It's the only thing I've ever wanted since I was a young girl." She is now suing Michael Garrett Associates for religious discrimination to make sure that no other Christian has to go through something like this. Hey, it's very easy for you as a Christian to not have to go through something like this. And the way to do that is to not be a bigot. You could be a Christian and an actress. Only thing is, you gotta drop the bigotry. That's the key. Drop the bigotry. Somebody should have told her that. And you know, the sad part about it is she probably did. But this is where I was talking about when we start talking about the religious or like how people view and use their religion, is that this is the only time that I ever really bitch about religion is when folks use it as a cudgel against marginalized groups of folks. That's it. If your religion enlightens you, if your religion puts you in a peaceful place, if your religion allows for you to like treat people with honor, decency, and respect, I have no problem at all with your being in whatever religion that it is that you're a part of. However, when your religion or your interpretation of said religion dictates that you treat people a certain way, disrespectfully, demean their humanity, question their existence, and I don't know. I was like, man, fuck you. So, yeah, man, that's in Blue Blazes. I couldn't put it in Proud to Be an American because this wasn't an American story. But yeah, man, Proud to Be an American. I mean, Blue Blazes, man. Now, another story that's here in Blue Blazes. Actually, this is more so along the lines of, let me see if I can pull it. This is more so on the lines of,
yeah, baby, it's sexy time with Mr. Spain.
Yeah, man. So, this ain't going where y'all think it's going, man. So there was a cat, man, and this cat was getting some cat. You know what I'm saying? No. Apparently, there was a cat who spent the night at like a a pet daycare, pet hotel. We've left our dog at like a pet daycare and stuff when we go out of town and whatnot. But like, so they left a cat there, and apparently this cat got down with five other cats all in one motherfucking night, man.
Got him.
More
got
like
him. Whoa, brother. Whoa. Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
Yeah, way too much dip on the chip. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the Daily Mail. It says a cat has been left needing a glucose drip after it made it with at least five females in one night when he was let out of his cage by the pet hotel staff. Zhao P, the Russian Blue, was left at the hotel by his owners, Mr. and Mrs. Zhao, in Guangdong Province in South China. Mrs. Zhao said that he had specifically told the business that Zhao P had not been neutered. It wasn't until the following day that Mrs. Zhao realized that Zhao P had been left to freely roam the pet hotel after staff went home. Mrs. Zhao wrote on social media to say, "I thought they'd be professional, but the staff member didn't feed Zhao P during the day and let him out to roam freely at night." That's right. All of the cats were free to walk around the shop, and then the employee went home. Between around 10:40 and 5 a.m., my cat made it with five female cats, and those were the only ones I could see. Those are the only ones I could see on the CCTV footage.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Oh, man. It said Mrs. Zhao claims that the pet hotel staff then blamed him for the incident and complained that some of the cat's owners were not planning on having kittens. He said they had the nerve to be upset with me. They wanted me to explain the situation to all the owners. My fucking cat is exhausted and on a glucose trip, and this is my Oh, man. Oh, man. He said Mrs. Zhao later revealed that the pet hotel apologized and offered to pay for Zhao P's fluid therapy. He added they were going to compensate each pregnant cat's owners 500 renminbi and have promised to sell any kittens on their behalf. The owners have also told me that they'll give me a kitten or 1,000 renminbi if their cat turns out to be pregnant. A pedigree Russian Blue can be worth anywhere between 350 pounds to well over 1,000 pounds. There's video attached to it. Let me see if I can play this, man. Oh, yeah, let me, I forgot, let me. Oh, man. All right, here we go, y'all. So, this is the cat here. Are they going to show him on this drip? No? Okay, so that was a pointless-ass video. Never mind. told y'all, man, that wasn't going where y'all thought it was going, but that was Sexy Time with Mrs. Fan.
Baby, it's Sexy Time with Mr. Span.
So, it's almost time for, well, not almost, but damn near.
Proud to be that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
That's enough of that shit. It's Proud to Be an American time here at the Span Report Podcast, man. And our first story here in Proud to Be an American is a young man spent 10 days in jail because he overslept. He overslept his jury duty.
God damn!
So let me pull this video up. We're going to check this out together as a family, as we are wont to do. So, yeah, man, this is crazy. Check this out, y'all.
New tonight at 6, most people have gotten a jury summons in the mail at some point or another, and we know how important it is. You have to show up. However, a young Florida man apparently didn't and ended up in jail for it.
The news station's David Bowden joins us live here in the studio to explain how just this one mistake has changed.
This did happen in Florida, by the way.
Change this guy's entire life, right, David?
You better believe it. DeAndre Somerville had never been in any trouble before, never had a reason to set foot in a courtroom. He says that he's never been in trouble with the law ever before, and that's up until he didn't show up for jury duty.
21-year-old DeAndre Somerville learned the hard way that you can't miss jury duty.
After going through that, it's like my life will never be the same again.
In August, he was sworn in as a juror on a civil case. He was to return the next day, but he overslept.
I woke up and I looked at the time, and I was like, oh shoot, it's past the time.
Mistake number two, he didn't call the jury office to let them know what was going on. Days later, he was served with a subpoena to go before the judge.
I talked with my granddad for a while, and he said, the best thing you can always do is honesty. So I went for the hearing.
DeAndre lives with his grandparents and helps look after his grandfather by taking him to therapy.
My grandma was saying, oh, I think you should dress up. And I was like, nah, I'm gonna wear my work clothes because I feel like at least he can see that I'm doing something. Because a lot of times people get stereotyped. Oh, he's just another black boy out here doing something he's not supposed to be doing.
But the 21-year-old didn't see what was coming.
I just said, sir, I honestly overslept and I didn't understand the seriousness of this. He asked me if I had a criminal record. I said, sir, I've never been arrested.
Transcripts show DeAndre apologized, but the judge sentenced him to 10 days in jail. DeAndre said that all he could do was think about his grandfather.
He depended on me. So it was like, you know, it's hard for him.
Judge John Kostranakis' order said DeAndre's failure to appear delayed the trial by 45 minutes, and the court couldn't reach him. Criminal analyst Michelle Sauce.
He inconvenienced him for 45 minutes and resulted in 10 days in jail. The fuck?
Scour says these cases are not common.
This is going to show others you have to take this very seriously. But this 21-year-old with no prior record now has a misdemeanor conviction. Could there have been other alternatives to maybe be more instructive and less punitive? It's possible.
He spent 10 days in jail, is on probation for 1 year, and has to complete 150 hours of community service.
It hurts, but it's like it's a lesson learned. It could have been worse. It could have gave me 365 days in jail.
It's a rough lesson to learn. The judge's order said that there was no good reason to explain why he didn't appear in court. Hopefully he will never have to step foot in a courtroom ever again.
All right. So, shout out to that young man because, you know, he has a much better perspective on that than I would have. You know, when he's talked about, you know, it could have been worse. He could have gave me a year, you know. One thing I think is real messed up about that is, for one, I'm sure there could have been, like, I don't know, a fine that he could have paid or a makeup of the jury duty for him to, you know, that he'd have to go to or something like that. But to spend 10 days in jail for you missing jury duty, I think that's well beyond the pale, man. The other thing too, and I think this is very important, and this goes back to the whole thing we talk about here on the show when it comes to voting, is that I would hope that the listeners that live in Florida, or that the people who watched this in Florida, who saw that judge was the one who meted out that sentence to that young man, who never been arrested, who was working, who was assisting his grandparents with therapy. I hope that y'all take note of that, and when it comes time for that judge to be reelected, to get y'all vote his ass out. Because this is a part of that voting process too. This is a part of that trying to keep y'all off of the voting roll shit too. Understanding like who these judges are, getting them off of the bench, because most of these appointments in like the district courts are voted on by you, the public. And then the other way that the judges are put on the bench is by those politicians whom you vote for, who then appoint judges to certain point, you know, to certain courts in the system. So, yo, man, take note of who that guy is. And as a matter of fact, let me see if I can pull his name up here, because I'm sure Judge John Kostranakis John Krasnakis. Make a note of this dude's name. Vote his ass out the next time he comes up for re-election so that he can't do this to someone else again. So, yeah, man, that's in Proud to Be an American. The other story that's here in Proud to Be an American is more so just kind of amusing to me because it involves Stacey Dash, man. And y'all know Stacey Dash kind of been out there a little bit lately, you know. She's been on that Trump train shit. And she was involved in a domestic violence case. And we're not making light of her domestic violence issues. You really don't want anybody to have to deal with that. But apparently she was arrested and her husband was not arrested for her being involved in domestic violence or them being involved in an altercation against each other. But apparently she's crying broke. She doesn't have any money to pay for a private attorney. And also, check this out, y'all. Also, in her arrest record, they got her listed as a white woman. It's like you want to cry, but you know you're laughing at the same time. Cause come on, man. Like I don't know what it is about going that conservative route, but it almost reminds me of that Vice. I remember watching that Vice video, Vice News video, when they were talking to conservative Latinos. It was like conservative Latinos and liberal Latinos, and they were basically just talking about the differences between how they see the world. And one of the interesting things about it was that, like, a lot of the ones, not a lot of them, every last one of the conservative Latinos that were on that video, every last one of them identified themselves as white. Every last one of them. And it's just interesting how she went from being, like, you know, in black rap music videos. Ironically, she was in Kanye's video and he ain't been the same. She's been like, you know, she's Dame Dash's cousin, and you know, she was in Clueless, but like she was in a lot of hood movies too. She was in like Smooth Magazine and King Magazine, you know, magazines that were marketed towards black men. And now she's really embracing this conservative white. It is weird, right? But she said she was white, but this story here is about the fact that she says that she can't afford an attorney. It says Dash has got more problems than just a possible domestic violence charge. Turns out she's broke. Stacey just filed legal docs claiming she's indigent, meaning she doesn't have enough to pay or hire a private lawyer. She's asking to be rep by a public defender in her case. TMZ broke the story. Stacey was arrested Sunday after a domestic disturbance that ended with scratches on her head on her husband's arm. Stacey claims any aggressiveness on her part was in self-defense and that her hubby actually attempted to choke her and she had to fend him off. Stacey claims her husband, a lawyer, got his kids to lie for him, claiming that she assaulted him. As for the public defender, the judge signed off on one for her, at least temporarily, so Stacey could be represented in the event charges were filed. The arrest is for misdemeanor domestic violence. By the way, the judge is asking Stacey to ante up proof showing financial need. Now, it's possible that she does have a financial need, because when was the last time you saw Stacey Dash on anything? There was a time where she was considering running for Congress. She dropped out of that. There was a time where she was a Fox News contributor. But the interesting thing about her being a Fox News contributor was the fact that, like, yo, she really had no political experience whatsoever. She was basically there to be a black face to a white supremacist talking point. And when they found that, like, she was no longer effective, they jettisoned her ass right on up out of there. And you have not seen interchangeable. You haven't seen Stacey Dash anywhere else since. This is the first time you've heard anything concerning Stacey Dash since she decided that she was going to try to run for Congress. That was last year, maybe. And she dropped out of that swift, smooth, quick, because she knew she ain't had no chance in hell of winning. So, yeah, man. That has been Proud to Be an American. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Now, it's almost time for us to get on up out of here. But before we do, y'all know what time it is.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And our ass hat of the week this week here at the Spam Report Podcast is none other than Remy Ma. Remy is a multiple ass hat here at the Spam Report Podcast, man. We might end up at a certain point having to put her in the Ass Hat Hall of Fame. And I think after three, you get Ass Hat Emeritus status. Remy, man, I don't know. I don't know what's up with her. But the reason why Remy Ma is the ass hat of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast is Remy Ma went on a show on Revolt TV with the State of the Culture, and she insinuated that women who take settlements during sexual assault cases are prostitutes. Yeah, she said that. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can pull up this clip where she says, oh, see, this is the whole video. Nah, we don't want to do that. Let me see. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. All right. There was a point here. Okay, let's see if we can. Here we go.
It seems like in a lot of these alleged sexual...
Let me pull this up so you guys can watch this right along with me, though. Let's do this right. All right. Here we go.
Assault cases. The women are asking for money. Hey, give me some money and I'll feel better. To me, in any exchange with sexual... acts are being compensated with money, like that's prostitution. I'm sorry, Remy, that's a gross simplification.
Okay. Really? You have to agree to the sex work. Really? Yes.
You know, you got to be on some fuck ass shit for Joe Budden to be like, nah, I don't know about that one, B. Come on, man. You on some bullshit. You got to be on some bullshit if Joe Budden is out here saying you on some bullshit. And he be on bullshit all the time. You got to be on the BS, man. But let's go. Let me go and let this play out.
Correct. Because in one instance, they'd be like, it was so horrible. And he did this to me. He did that to me. But give me $2 million. And I mean, I'll go sit over there and I won't tell anybody.
Okay, you sound ignorant.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Okay, so never mind. This is one of those videos where people start adding shit. Listen. Let's talk a little bit. Okay. We've talked about this here on the show quite a bit. Sometimes one of the only ways that a sexual abuse victim is able to receive any level of justice may be in the form of a monetary payoff or in a settlement. It's much easier to get a favorable judgment in your favor through civil court than it is through the criminal courts. The burden of proof is much higher in criminal courts. More often than not, when it comes to sexual assault cases, it's mostly he said, she said, in large part. I don't know why. I do kind of know why. I've said this on the show quite a few times too, that men are not the only purveyors of patriarchal, norms and talking points, that men don't have a monopoly on misogyny. We just don't. There are a lot of women who walk around with some of the same, misogynistic views towards women that men do. And to some degree, I think that what's going on with Remy Ma is that this is pretty much where she's at. That Remy Ma also walks around with a lot of patriarchal views, with a lot of misogynistic views, and she's okay with that. The unfortunate thing is Remy Ma gets on a show. I'm not sure how many, you know, millions of viewers, if they get millions of views. I'm sure hundreds of thousands of views. I'm not sure how many people are watching that show, but she has a large enough platform with being on Love and Hip Hop and being on the show where, like, people are listening to what Remy Ma is saying, and some folks are internalizing what she's saying, and what she said right there was bullshit. What she said right there was fucked up. To equate taking a cash settlement for your pain and suffering to prostitution, it's fucked up. No other way to put it. It's fucked up. So with that, Remy Ma is our ass hat of the week this week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, our champ this week here at the Spare Report Podcast is none other than Marilyn Mosby, Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby. All right. Now, she's the champ of this week here at the Spare Report Podcast because apparently Marilyn Mosby listed 25 different police officers in the Baltimore Police Department as being dishonest. And because of that, they begin wiping out 790 convictions of people who have been arrested because of these dishonest police officers. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the Baltimore Sun. It says that Baltimore State's attorney Marilyn Mosby has begun asking the courts to throw out nearly 800 criminal cases handled by 25 city police officers, saying she found reason to distrust more than a dozen cops in addition to 8 convicted in the gun trace task force scandal. These additional officers had not previously been disclosed by her office. 3 of them remain with the Baltimore Police, a police spokesman said. The 3 are Robert Hankert, a detective in Central Baltimore, Kenneth Ivory, a sergeant in Southwest Baltimore, and Jason Giordano, a sergeant in the citywide robbery unit. Hankert has been suspended. They did not respond to a message to the department. The number of officers involved fluctuates as her office continues to investigate. Mosby said on Friday that while clarifying that the number of the officers is 25, not the 22 in the initial release, Mosby said that her office's assessments of cases is not over. This is just the first phase, and that more cases could be dismissed as her attorneys gather more information. She said that all of the names her office has released this week were included in court filings by her attorneys to vacate the nearly 800 cases handled by the tainted officers. Now, the reason, outside of this particular act in trying to right a wrong by the police department in Baltimore and vacate the convictions of those almost 800 people, or the 800 convictions. I'm not sure how many of those people were hit with multiple convictions. But in vacating those convictions, like, that in and of itself is worthy of champ of the week this week. But going back to that email that I got earlier in the show, where you asked about, you know, the thing with Killer Mike. In that particular Revolt Summit, Killer Mike also leveled a veiled shot at Kamala Harris, the one black woman running for president of the United States in this current, you know, election. And he said that he could not vote for a prosecutor for president of the United States, that them being a prosecutor in and of itself disqualified them from his vote. And to that, I will say, I guess Marilyn Mosby doesn't have a fucking shot in hell at ever being a presidential candidate should she decide to move up in, you know, the political world, because of the fact that she simply held this position of being a prosecutor, despite what she's doing with this particular case or with this particular issue with vacating the cases of 25 police officers, 25 crooked police officers, vacating 790 cases. And this is just supposedly the first phase. Just saying, man, when you pay attention to some of these things, man, the things that come out of the mouths of those folks, sometimes you just be like, whatever. But, yo, it is time for me to get on up out of here. I really need to be getting ready to go to this party. I got some, you know, a birthday party to go to tonight. But before I go, let me remind you guys how to get in touch with your man Span here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, those messages will be played here on the show and respond in kind. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. And, of course, those emails will get read here live on the show as well. Follow your man Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr. Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Also, hit us up on our website when I get that motherfucker back up. Hit us up on the website at www.thespanreport.com. You can go there, watch replays of the show. You can leave comments there. You can vote in the polls when we put one up. You can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And of course, we appreciate every dime over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. And you do those donations through PayPal. But you can also hit us up on our Patreon at patreon.com/TSRPN. And on that Patreon, you can become a Golden Circle member and help us continue to do this show live here on Crowdcast, man. So those people who do the Patreon, that is what your money is going towards to help us do these shows live here on Crowdcast. Also, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. We really appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. Doesn't take any money from your no money from your pocket, man. No money from your pocket. Just a little bit of your time, man, to go ahead and let everybody else know why you mess with us over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. But it's time for me to get on up out of here. I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.